ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let's kick off with independent financial advisor Nick Bruning. Nick, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Hello, Phil. Great to be here.
Yes, well, good to have you as well. Well, the year's rolling on, isn't it?
It's flying by.
I know. It's April already.
I know. Yes, the final quarter of the year, Phil, it's all happening. Tax time, not far away. I think we can just about get to how many sleeps to go. But, the end of the tax year looms.
You should be thinking about it, shouldn't you?
Yeah, look, it's sort of the time when you can start to put in some strategies that maybe you can't do at the last minute. And particularly for people that might have made a few dollars over the year, maybe selling some assets. They might have cashed in on the property boom and looking at a big fat capital gain. So now's the time to perhaps look at things to reduce that taxable income. So I was going to suggest that one of the things you can try and make use of course, is superannuation. And in fact, the ATO website's got a fantastic resource, which is basically keeps track of all your superannuation contributions for you. You get to it via that MyGov portal, but if you click the superannuation tab, it'll tell you how much has been paid in as far as contributions are concerned for this financial year. Now, the secret of that is that you've got up to $27,500 you can claim as a deduction, which includes what the boss has paid in. So you might be able to tweak things there and make a contribution to super to get a deduction. Yeah. And the other one is that if you've made some profits on anything and you've got some old shares, you know, the ones in the bottom of the drawer that the taxi driver told you to buy 20 years ago, what's happened to them? Well, you can actually offload those shares and sell them to crystallise the loss effectively. Under normal tax law, the company has to liquidate and all sorts of things go on. But there is a company that for a fee does a small service called delisted.com.au where they'll actually buy your rubbish shares for a dollar or something, and then you've got a realised capital loss that you can use to reduce the capital gains you might have made in other things. So it takes a few weeks to do, which is why I'm talking about it now, because now's the time to perhaps look at those sorts of things.
Yeah, speaking of the superannuation cap, that's likely to increase, isn't it?
It is. And in fact, it's been confirmed now that thanks to an increase in average weekly ordinary time earnings in the December quarter, the contribution cap will go from $27,500, which is what it is this financial year, up to $30,000 next financial year. Now, the significance of that is it flows through to this other thing called the non-concessional cap. Now, that's the $110,000 limit currently. That's actually linked to four times the concession cap. Sounds very confusing, but basically it'll go to $120,000, mm-hmm. which also means that if you're using the bring forward trick where you can bring up to 3 years of contributions forward into 1 year, that gives you $360,000 that you could pop into super after the 1st of July. So plenty of opportunities to boost the super fund, and I can tell you that all the super fund managers are absolutely delighted, Bill.
I'm sure they are. A
few more fees they can clip.
I'm sure they are. Hey, when did the tax cuts arrive?
1st of July. So I'm pretty sure that legislation's all now passed. So we'll see some changes to your take-home pay on the 1st of July. We're suggesting for people that have perhaps got used to where things are at the moment in terms of disposable income, and I know that a lot of our listeners are struggling, but if you're in a position where perhaps it's not going too badly, you might redirect that extra take-home pay to perhaps, making some extra payments on your mortgage if you've got any debts or credit cards, that sort of stuff.
You mean rather than just trouser of the cash?
Yes, right. Well, that is probably the preferred option, Phil, but for those of us that are sensible, we should probably do something constructive with it. But yeah, so it's not going to be bucket loads, but it will make a bit of a difference to people. And of course, it's all thanks to bracket creep. And here we are talking about, the fact that average weekly ordinary time earnings has gone up. Well, that's sticking more and more people in the higher tax brackets. So, that's an argument for another day. Are the tax cuts significant enough to make a difference? But anyway.
John from Geelong. Hi, John.
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I have a self-funded superannuation run by a company, and in the last quarter or maybe 6 months, there was something like 189 sales conducted and maybe another 100 purchases. And I'm just wondering, who's paying for all those changes?
John, almost certainly you are. So can I just clarify things? So it's a self-managed super fund, but it's being run by someone else. Is that kind of where it is?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay. So what you've really got to look at is the net returns on what you're receiving and compare that to some of those low-cost options that are out there. And what I'm talking about is if you look at, say, the annual return, perhaps over the last 3-5 years, something like that, and compare that to what you might have got in one of the low-cost funds, a retail fund or whatever, and just make sure that you're actually coming out ahead. Because what I find with a lot of these situations is that you end up with a self-managed super fund and it's so much going on that you kind of lose sight of where you should be, which is getting a better return than if you were giving it to someone else to look after. So I'd look very closely at that. But look, at the end of the day, those transactions are almost certainly, you know, coming out of the returns of your superannuation fund. So unless they're really adding value to it, I'd be asking some questions firstly. But then overall, having a good look at the returns, because your average, balanced super fund's returning something like 7 or 8%, and that's after all fees and costs and everything's taken out, and that's, you know, what you get left within your hot little hand as far as an annual return's concerned. So perhaps it's time to have a look at things, John.
All right, thank you very much for that.
No worries. What's this about thousands of part pensioners and some full benefit punters getting in their pension? Why did that happen?
So, on the 20th of March, we saw a pension increase, which for singles, which I think was about $19 or something, and for couples, it was similar sort of figure, about up to $30 combined. So what happens is, what people don't realise is Centrelink will recalculate the value of your managed investments, which includes things like super funds, share portfolios and all the rest of it. So it's kind of like, you know, what they give on one hand, they take away on the other. And the valuations they would have used will have been the values as at the end of February. Now, the last time Centrelink automatically ran the systems, if you like, would have been in September, and that was based on the end of August valuations for shares and stuff. So we've seen an increase of about 8% over that period of time. So that would be reflected in the current asset value that would be used to calculate your pension entitlements. Now, a couple of things that people have misunderstandings about. One is that they think that people constantly, at Centrelink, track your bank balances. They don't. Mm-hmm. If they smell a rat, they absolutely can. They can go in there and get all the information they want. But there's no automatic link between your bank and Centrelink to tell them how much you've got in your bank account. So if you spend any money, it's absolutely up to you to tell them that you've done it. And you need to do it within 14 days of any changes of about $2,000 or more to your finances. But so many people miss out on a bit of extra pension because they didn't bother to update Centrelink. The easiest way to do that is to simply, again, go online via the MyGov portal. And if you've linked Centrelink to it, you can actually go in there and change the numbers yourself. You can go in there and update the bank balance. And many times it'll simply process the change and you'll get your increased pension from that point forward. Sometimes I'll ask for supporting information, particularly if it's a big amount involved or changed in bank accounts or stuff like that. But generally speaking, it'll be pretty much instantaneous. The other thing is to make sure that some of these fixed assets, so we're talking about things like cars and boats and caravans, and yep, sure, you might have paid $120,000 for your U-Butte four-wheel drive, but the moment it hit the driveway, it dropped in value, and equally each year it drops in value. So it's up to us to make sure that those fixed assets like cars and contents and that sort of stuff, we reflect the current values and depreciate it as those things age over time. So a little bit of tweaking, it doesn't mean you're going to get back, you know, all that you might have lost, particularly if you've got a decent amount invested in shares, but it just sort of proves the point that it's worth keeping on top of Centrelink as much as everything else to make sure that you're getting entitlements. Now, this only applies, Phil, to folks that are on a part pension. Mm-hmm. So if you're a single person getting $1,116.30 a fortnight, that's the full amount. That's you can't get any more than that. And similarly for couples, the combined amount is $1,682.80 a fortnight. If you're getting that much, you're getting the full amount and you can't get any more by tweaking things.
Mm, okay. Greg on the text line. Hi, Nick. I'm 63, permanently retired due to major health reasons. I've got a rental property worth $600,000, and the $850 per week I get is my only income, apart from some interest on $200K I've got in the bank. Friends have said I could get a disability support pension, but I don't think I can because of my assets. Can you please advise? I'm not going too well on just the money I'm earning.
Yeah. So, Greg, assuming that you're a single person and assuming that you perhaps may also own your own home as well as the investment property, because I don't think Greg's mentioned that, has he, Phil?
He didn't mention whether he owns his own home, but let's assume that he does.
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing to understand is that Centrelink will assess the value for the asset test of the $600,000 investment property. However, they will offset any loans against that investment property, providing the security is against the investment property. It's all very confusing. But if you've secured an investment loan against your own primary exempt dwelling, Centrelink will ignore it completely. But if you've secured it against the investment property, that debt will come off the value. So $600,000 might suddenly become $200,000, which is will be assessable under the asset test. So providing as a homeowner your assets are under $301,750, you'd qualify for a full pension under the asset test. But even with the reduction at a rate of $3 per thousand, it actually means that you can still have assets up to $674,500, which is kind of where we are with this investment property, and you'd still qualify for a part pension under the asset test. Now, there's another test, which is the income test, and whichever test produces the lowest amount is the one they'll use. But my gut feeling is it's the asset test that's going to kick in for Greg. But as I say, if it's a question of if it's a property that's been purchased with borrowed funds, make sure the loan is secured against the property, because we may well find that instead of $600,000 being assessed, Centrelink might only assess $200,000, in which case he'd be entitled to a full pension under the asset test. Which is $1,116.30 a fortnight.
Which is not too bad.
Not to be sneezed at. Mm.
Craig in Hobart says, 60-year-old, single, work full-time. What about the advantages of transition to retirement?
Yeah, so just
I still
explaining.
I've still got a mortgage and I'm on average income.
Yeah, so Craig, for everyone else's benefit, what Craig's talking about is when we get to 60 years of age, we can set up a thing called a transition to retirement account-based pension. In fact, right now it's 59, but it'll be 60 from the 1st of July. Mm-hmm. And what you basically can do is you can take your superannuation and convert it into what we call an income stream product or an account-based pension. Now, at Craig's 60 years of age, he must take out at least 4% of the account balance per year, but he can take out up to 10% of the account balance per year. Now, generally speaking, Phil, transition to retirement is okay on one condition, and that is if he's doing something like I hope he will, which is to perhaps repay his debt, his non-tax deductible debt, which is his mortgage, because the mortgage is probably costing him now north of 6%. His superannuation won't guarantee a payment of it that 6%. So by getting rid of his mortgage, he's basically getting a risk-free rate of return of 6% after tax. All very confusing. But basically, you could certainly use the transition to retirement account-based pension to reduce your mortgage as quickly as you can. If you get to 10% of the account balance per year, if you get to a situation where you've got the mortgage paid off, then you can start contributing money back into superannuation up to that new $30,000 figure from next year. So it's a valid strategy. But look, I think that sometimes I see these things set up for the sake of recontributing money back to super and that's it. And I kind of scratch my head a bit and think, well, what's the point? I mean, you've already got it in there. If you can afford it, then perhaps just up the contribution to super instead of necessarily setting up one of these complicated transition to retirement things.
Yeah. Mm. Thomas from Ocean Grove. G'day, Thomas.
Hello, gentlemen. My question is that I'm about to get my hands on my super, and I'm looking to do a self-managed super fund, and I'm seeing lots of ads for private equity, and I was wondering, Nick, your views on private equity. They're paying anything from 6, 7, 10, 14%.
Yeah.
As opposed to
Perhaps I'll explain what private equity is for the benefit of our other listeners, Thomas. So what we're talking about are companies which aren't listed on the stock exchange, which are just like normal businesses that you can't buy shares on normally. So what private equity people do is that they basically sell chunks of their companies to various, often fund managers, who in turn then pass it on to investors like Thomas and stuff. I suppose the upside of it is that, yes, you're quite right. In fact, I was recently at a conference where they were talking a lot about private equity and how great it was, is that the returns are often pretty good because they're not, I suppose one of the plus sides is also its downside, is that they're not sort of constrained in the same way that perhaps a listed company is with all sorts of rules and regulations and stuff. But therein brings in a potential problem too, is you're not quite sure what's going on if they don't have the same controls and restrictions that some of these listed companies do. I think that if you, in my view, do it via a reasonably competent and track fund manager with an established track record in private equity investing, that's probably a way to do it, that you're going to kind of hedge your bets a little bit than trying to, you know, unless you're really an expert in these things, pick the private equity investments yourself. So there are different funds and exchange-traded funds out there which have some access to private equity. So I'd go down that path. Also, Thomas, I'd just be a little bit careful. While we talk about the returns, let's not forget that the risks are there. And I would be, you know, loath not to warn you about, risk and return. And at this stage in life, do you really want to risk, you know, the chance of losing a big chunk of your money if things turn sour on you? I like to think that as we get closer to retirement, we back off a bit on risk and take the easy life, so to speak.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Good advice. But how to value, how to measure the risk in these? Is there a
not really, not so, not as simple as that. That's why I say perhaps a good quality managed fund would be the way to go. Look, there's a couple of decent research sites that you can have a look at. And look, you'll have to pay money to get the research that you'll need. Sites like Lonsdale, Morningstar, some of the big Standard & Poor's, some of those bigger organisations, they have a consumer arm, if you like, that they'll sell research to you for. But to be honest, I would be doing a lot more than just relying on stuff you read on the internet. I'd be paying for that good information, particularly with private equity.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen.
Okay,
no worries, Thomas. Thank you. Lachlan from Greenwich says, can you please clarify the tax deductibility of super contributions if they're below your cap?
Sure.
Does this apply to your annual cap or the bring forward do you pay contributions tax?
Okay. this is juicy stuff, Phil. All very confusing, isn't it? But anyway, so we've got two sorts of contributions. A concessional contribution is where someone is claiming a tax deduction for it. And it's usually your boss with the 11% compulsory superannuation, but it also can be you as an individual, either through thing called salary sacrifice, where you redirect some of your pay before tax, or you make your own contribution and claim it as a deduction at tax time. So the limit for that is $27,500. Anything up to that, no problems whatsoever. If, however, your superannuation balance is less than $500,000, then what you can then do is make use of previously unused concessional contribution caps from up to 5 years prior. So let's say, for example, last year the contribution cap was $27,500. You only had $17,500 paid in. You've got $10,000 left over. You could add $10,000 to this year's $27,500. So, in fact, you could put in $37,500. So because it goes back up to 5 years, the current amount all up is $132,500 less whatever has gone in already. So providing your balance is under $500,000, that's how much you could contribute to superannuation, less what's already gone in. So it's pretty useful. We use it a lot for people that perhaps have made a capital gain. I mentioned that at the start, where maybe you've sold an investment property and you're looking at a big capital gain, then putting some money into super might be a way of reducing that assessable income and reducing the capital gains tax bill.
Okay. Thanks for that. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Ryan on the road in Dandenong. G'day, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
G'day. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
My question is, I'm currently using my super as a way to save for a house through the first time super saver scheme.
Yep.
And at the moment, my money is just in the fund's default growth option.
Yep.
I'm looking to buy a house in one, maybe 2 years, and wondering if maybe I should adjust how my money is being managed in the super, just so there's less risk of losing some of that money when I'm looking at draw the money to buy.
So, Ryan, can I ask how old you are?
I'm 31.
Right, so you're a young spring chicken relative to us, Phil. So just so everyone can again understand, the First Home Super Saver Scheme is a way where first home buyers can pay money into superannuation as a tax deduction or as a non-concessional contribution, and then withdraw it for the purposes of buying their first home. And you can put in up to $50,000 at a maximum of $15,000 per year. Now, the thing is that the amount that you get back includes what you've paid in plus the earnings, but the earnings are fixed by the government. It's actually linked to the general statutory interest rate or something like, I can't remember the name, but basically it's a relatively low rate of return, but effectively, if the fund earns more than that, well, good luck to you, because your fund will have grown. You can't take out what it actually earned. Now, therein lies a good thing, because if the fund doesn't earn whatever that statutory rate is, 4.6 or 4.8%, whatever it is, you still get that money. However, you've bitten into the capital. So what Ryan's talking about doing is he's talking about changing the mix of his superannuation fund so that the returns are potentially greater, because he's got a higher exposure to risky assets. And therein lies the thing, Ryan, is that the fact that you'll still be accessing the money. The reason I asked your age is that at 31, you can't even go near your super for another 29 years anyway. So over that period of time, there's a very good chance that whatever you took out will have recovered and some in terms of investment returns. So as long as you can sort of withstand that risk side of things, then it's probably a pretty reasonable strategy. In fact, valid for anyone that's young like that in their, you know, late 20s, 30s, to have a reasonably growth type approach to their investment. In other words, have a higher risk type profile, because you'll probably end up with a much better return over those 29 years or so. So hopefully that makes sense, Ryan. You're stuck with the return that you get, but by all means up the ante a little bit by changing it to the growth option.
Okay. Thanks, Ryan. Good on you. Appreciate your call. Amber from Parramatta. G'day, Amber.
Oh, good evening. Gentlemen, I wanted to ask, your private residence, if you rent it out through Airbnb or some other means to help supplement your living expenses, mm-hmm. what would be the tax or pension implications for doing that with a private residence?
Yep. So there's a couple of things. You are actually conducting a business from your home. So we kind of start to lose some of those private concessions which exist under the Tax Act and under the Social Security Act, all sorts of things. So a couple of things. In the first instance, the income is absolutely tax accessible. But being realistic about it, what you might find is that by the time you allow for the expenses associated with it, and you're probably best talking to an accountant and sorting this out, you might find that you're not actually making as much money out of it as you first thought. So just be aware that that side of the taxable income equation might not be as horrible as you first think. Same applies with Centrelink side of things. So those expenses associated with running the Airbnb enterprise can come off the income that you receive, but you absolutely do need to declare that to Centrelink, and you basically have a bit of a profit and loss statement that shows how things are going. Now, the other thing to consider is that because the property is no longer being used primarily for private purposes, there may be capital gains tax implications when you come to sell it. So, a portion of the home that you're now using to make money out of could be subject to capital gains tax. So, again, it sounds like a good idea. There's some exemptions for letting money to your family and stuff like that. But if it's a commercial enterprise like an Airbnb, then you need to be aware of it. And understand too, Amber, that the ATO and everyone's onto this. They're patrolling stays and Airbnb like everyone.
All right.
So just be careful.
Yeah. Let me jump in here for a second, because I just want to welcome some others to the program. We're talking with Nick Bruning, but it's time to welcome some others to the program as well.
This is Nightlife with Phil Clark
on ABC Radio.
And if you've just joined us, Nick Bruning, Independent Financial Advisor, is with us. This is a Nightlife. Nick, sorry, go on. Amber, is that enough?
Well, I appreciate that, because I thought it might be a little bit of a complicated thing and maybe not so advantageous.
Well, it's nice to have any, and some people I know do Airbnb for the company, Amber, to be honest. So, there's all sorts of benefits that come from it. But look, you've just got to be a bit realistic about the financial side of things. And as I say, it might be worth spending a couple of $100 with an accountant to sit down and work out exactly what that accessible income would be. But don't, if you end up, when it's all cut and dry, you're making $10 for a night, then you sort of wonder if it's worthwhile at all in the first place.
Exactly.
All right.
It's not worth the trouble, because I think I don't get along with strangers too well.
Thanks, Amber.
See, there should be a dog Airbnb, Phil, for my dog.
Dog Airbnb. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Kelly from Mullumbimby. Yes, Kelly?
Oh, hi there. My question, I think you've probably answered it over all of the people that have called. We have an investment property, mm-hmm. and we're thinking of selling it. We are going to make quite a, you know, it's changed a lot since we've owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thinking about putting a small another dwelling on our property to have my parents come to live with us.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, with the money that we make out of that and after we've, you know, obviously built the second dwelling, would we be not paying off the remainder of our mortgage? We're 55 years old, both of us.
Yeah.
Or would we be better off putting that into super at our age?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things to look at. One would be that at 55 years of age, we don't have those, or the risks aren't as great about some ratbag changing the rules on us as we move through through our working life. So you're probably reasonably safe as far as the rules and regs are concerned. It depends a little bit on how much you've got in super, but what you might do is a bit of both, Kelly, to be honest. So you might end up making a decent capital gain on the property if it's owned jointly with your partner, presumably it is. Okay,
yes,
so that's so you've held it for more than 12 months, so half the profit firstly is divided between the two of you, and then that's added to your other income for the year. So, and I assume you're going to continue working beyond 55? You're not thinking of slowing?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So all that, nothing changes. All right. So what you might do is look at contributing some of that money to superannuation as much as you reasonably can under the contribution cap rules. But then I would absolutely look at knocking off the mortgage as quickly as I can, because then you don't have the deductibility benefits of it, because it's your own private mortgage. Of course, that'll clear up the cash flow that you'll have from no longer having to make those mortgage payments. And that money could be redirected to super and go in as a tax-deductible concessional contribution. So, you know, it'll end up as a win-win overall, but you'll end up getting your title deeds back, you know, and not paying the bank 6% or 7% interest.
Yeah, which would be nice. Perfect.
There you go.
That's kind of what we were thinking. Thank you.
Trust your instincts. Most of us know how to do this. Sometimes you get someone that whispers in your ear, you know, that and often someone that might have a vested interest in redirecting your funds, but often common sense wins every time in my game.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. Jeff on the Gold Coast says, "G'day, I'm 62, full-time employed. I'm not a homeowner and I have no assets.
Mm-hmm.
Can I set up a self-managed super fund? And with my $400,000, I presume when he says he has no assets, I presume he has that.
Yeah.
Can I set up a self-managed super fund and with my $400,000 buy $400,000 in gold and sit on it?"
Well, you could, but it's not a particularly smart strategy. For a couple of reasons. Firstly, whilst I don't, you know, dislike self-managed super funds, I view them as another product that's out there that's sold often by accountants and financial advisors. So what you need to look at is what's the cost of running a self-managed super fund. And the regulators have come up with various figures, but generally speaking, I like a figure of about $500,000 to $600,000 as a bare minimum, providing you're doing most of the work. Because what often happens, Phil, is that people set up a self-managed fund and all they're doing is they're paying an accountant and an advisor and someone else to do all this work. And in the end, they end up paying much more in fees than they might have done otherwise. The second thing I've got a bit of a problem with is investing in one asset class. So you are absolutely tossing a coin on the fact that gold will continue to go up, and maybe it will and maybe it won't, but we just don't know. And the thing about gold and those sorts of assets is that they kind of don't do anything other than go up or down depending on sentiment. Mm-hmm.
It's not like a building where you're getting rent, or it's not like a business where you're getting dividends from, all those sorts of things. So that's why we like the idea of spreading our risk around to having different investments in a super fund, so property and shares and cash and bonds and things
diversify. And not because you know, one's going to do better than the other, guaranteed, but what it is, it's about knowing that, well, if one does go well and the other one goes you know, pear-shaped, we're not going to lose all our dough. Sure. Whereas we have no idea what could happen in golf. Maybe it'll go up, maybe it'll go down, but if it goes down, you'll be kicking yourself.
Jeff, if you figured out whether it's going to go up or down, you could ring and tell us. Actually, probably don't tell us.
That's right.
Keep it to yourself.
And I need lotto numbers too, Jeff.
We need lotto numbers as well. That's right. Desmond on the Hume. G'day, Des.
Hello. Yeah, I'm Desmond. Now I'm on the Hume. I need to ask about that Nick Bruning. I'm a truckie. I'm still working full time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I got about 190 plus super on my super.
Yep.
My mortgage is about 150 to pay. Can I still borrow the money from my super to pay it off my mortgage or not?
Desmond, can I ask your age?
I'm 62 now.
Right. Yeah. So you can do what I was mentioning to, I think it was Craig earlier on. But anyway, what you can do is commence a thing called a transition to retirement account-based pension. So under the rules, you could move your $190,000 into one of these pension funds, and this year you could withdraw $19,000, being the maximum amount permitted, 10%. Okay? You could whack that straight off your mortgage, and then next financial year you could whack off another 10%. So, you know, if it's held its own, it's made money, then maybe you're looking at, you know, another $19,000 or $18,000, whatever the figure is. One other thing, if you reach 60 years of age and you cease any form of employment, now it doesn't have to be your job as a truckie, Desmond, but any job, it might be that you change employers or something like that, then you've satisfied the condition of release that allows you to access all of your super. So in actual fact, you could rip out the whole $150,000 and pay it off your mortgage. Now, just as I was saying to Jeff before, if you did that, that would free up the mortgage payment, so you could put that money into superannuation, top it back up again if you like, but you'd be saving dead money, which is the money paid to the bank on your mortgage, 6-7%, whatever the interest rate you're being charged, which is a much more certain rate of return than you'll get on your superannuation. We like to think we're going to get 6-7%, but it's always going to be determined by what markets are doing, share markets, property markets, you know what. Does that make sense, Desmond?
Yeah, that's it's very helpful. Because I want to go bit easy now with the physical, you know.
I get that. Absolutely.
I was doing about nearly 20 years on the highway now, and I'm getting sicker now. And
Super's built up to a nice tidy sum, mate. So that's good. And you know, like I was saying earlier, now's the time to sort of be careful with your super. But getting rid of debt, you'll never convince me that someone going into retirement should have a debt, because all of the tax benefits disappear out the window. Anyone that's doing negative gearing, all those sorts of things, it just doesn't stack up for me. So getting rid of the debt.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, my house is roughly worth nearly about a bit over 1 million now.
Woo! Whoa, Desmond, mate. Sell it.
I can go with half to pay it off to put it in the super deposit or something. Yeah.
Yep. The answer is yes, Desmond. You can use it. All right, mate. Thank you. Good luck and well done.
That's the thing.
If you work hard, you do get somewhere.
You do, and you know, it's interesting. Phil, everyone telling us how their house will be 1.2 million. They say, downside, but you've got to buy something else half the time. And the other place is 1.2 million as well.
Texter says, I just won Division 5 at Oz Lotto. I won $55.
$55. Some good advice. I don't know. $55.
All right.
I think I won $12 once, Phil. I'm not a big lotto person myself.
I know. Someone said the lottos, what are these? They're set up for the mathematically challenged.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Still, someone wins every week. Let's not go in there. Stephen from Coronella in Victoria. G'day, Stephen.
You basically answered my question on when you get to 60, because I've been in the one industry since I was 20, in aged care and disability, and my body is nearly wrecked, where I get out of bed in the morning and it's taken me half an hour to get motivated. But I'm wondering, with my super, I am allowed to get it complete once I'm 60, which is in 6 months. Am I allowed to go out and buy a small business to set my new partner up in life?
So, Stephen, you can, but like I was saying before, the rules are that once you get to 60, it doesn't mean you can just go and get your super, okay? You need to satisfy the condition of release, which is ceasing gainful employment since turning 60. So once you turn 60, if you changed employers or you started up another job and stopped that job, then you've ticked the box that allows you to access your superannuation, okay? So, what I would also do, because I don't know, Stephen, is this sort of your life retirement savings tied up in the super fund?
Well, it is, but my partner is a lot younger than I.
Yep.
We got three little girls and one on the way.
Yep.
And that's why I want to build a granny flat for myself.
That's fine. Okay. Well, look, my only sort of counsel to you is to perhaps just get make sure that the business is set up properly and it's going to, you know, do well for both, for all of you, not both of you, but all of you. And you know, it might be worth spending out of that money in super a couple hundred bucks. So go and have a chat with an accountant before it's all up and running, just to make sure you've ticked all the boxes and you are actually going to make good money out of it. Because just to make sure that you, you're doing the right thing. Oh, I'm sure you are, but sometimes it helps to get a second set of eyes to look at these things to make sure you're going to do okay.
Thank you so much for that. I totally agree with your comments. Yeah.
Thanks, Stephen. Good on you. 1-300-800-222. Ian from Ipswich. Hi, Ian.
Hi, gentlemen.
Ian, hi. How can I help?
Hi, Ian.
Yeah, look, I had the age pension, first got it in 2014, and since then I kept up work part-time casual or part-time permanent or casual. Now, when COVID hit, I just got shifts thrown at me, left, right and centre. I ended up earning, I think for the fortnight, $2,000 or over $2,000 all through that period. And then post-COVID, there was a labour shortage, and again, people were just working. Now, unbeknown to me, I lost my pension because I worked six consecutive fortnights over an amount that the Centrelink specifies, and I think it was $2,000.
Yeah, it changes three times a year.
If you go under that for one fortnight, then it kicks off again. The next six fortnights start again. But this isn't publicised much in talk shows like this or in the press. It's all about your work bonus and earning a little bit extra money.
Yeah.
So I lost the pension totally, but I was happy getting zero pension every fortnight, but I had my concessions. Then when they ceased the pension, I lost all my concessions.
Yeah. So what you? Yeah. Okay. Look, I have to think back to what the rules were in COVID. There were some different rules under income and asset tests. So you'll have to forgive me for not being able to rattle those off. But look, Centrelink over the period of time have had different systems for assessing income for people that are in different employment situations. So, for example, if you're self-employed and you've got, say, a family trust or a business set up, Centrelink actually take the previous 12 months' income from that business and apply it for the following 12 months. So it's one of the reasons why when people get to retirement and they've got companies and trust and stuff, that we tell them to wind them up, otherwise they'll be assessed for the future 12 months. Centrelink did have a system where they would average over, I think it was either 6 or 12 weeks. And to be honest, Ian, I'm not sure if it's changed, but I do know now that people are required to report every fortnight. So in other words, every 14 days via the MyGov portal generally, what their actual income is, so that the income is determined on a fortnight by fortnight basis. Now, that actually got a lot of people upset because it meant that, you know, even if your income never changed, it was basically you still had to report. But from what I understand, and again, it's a while since I looked at it, it certainly cleaned up a lot of these underpayment and overpayment issues that you've raised. So I think the system now is that you do need to report fortnightly. That way that the amount that you'll receive is accurate. I do know that under new rule changes too, that if you are if you go off the pension because of the income test through employment, that you'll actually stay on the system for a lot longer. I think it's even a year or something like that. And when you stop work, you can immediately reactivate. So it's a lot easier than it used to be. It used to be 13-week and then you're off. But so what I would do is head along to centrelink.gov.au and just and have a look at the retirement section and talks about working and what sort of income you can earn and how you need to report.
Yes, okay. I think I've got it all sorted out now because I had quite a few visits to Centrelink and I was doing that reporting, what you spoke about.
Yeah,
It was just that unknown or little known rule that working within the system over the six fortnights. If you just go under for one fortnight, you're okay. If you just keep working and go over their limit, they just cut the pension.
Yeah, well, worse than that, they can sometimes raise a debt if you haven't, you know, followed the rules as far as they're concerned. I just might mention, Phil, too, that we spoke a couple of shows ago about an issue with delays in processing Centrelink applications, some of them blowing out for months in some cases. As far as I know, Centrelink has still got an administrative type, thing going where if your application is delayed and it's sort of tied up in Centrelink's systems, and it's kind of their fault that you're not going to be penalised. And that also applies for people that might be updating income details or asset details. If you've done the right thing, given them the information, but they haven't processed it, it might not necessarily give rise to a debt once they get to it. So just make sure that if you have a change in financial circumstances within 14 days, you're required to let them know.
Okay. Thanks, Ian. Good on you. Kathy on the text line. I'm 61, have a mortgage of $125,000. Can I leave my job, take my super, then get a part-time job to supplement the super pension?
Absolutely.
Yes, you can.
You can. And in fact, that's what a lot of people do. They decide that they no longer want to do that 9-to-5 job and put up with the boss and the water cooler talk, and they quit their employment. I once had a gentleman, Phil, who was a senior accountant, and he ended up quitting work and retired and hated it and ended up getting a job delivering muffins to petrol stations. He ended up as fat as a whale because he ate all the leftover stock. But you know, he had a better send off when he retired from that job than he did with his big sort of accounting career. So so there's plenty of opportunities for people looking for work out there at the moment.
Indeed, there are. Dannon, is it Dannon? Hello. G'day, Dannon.
Hello. Darren.
Sorry, Darren. The computer's got you as Dannon, but there you go.
No, that's
it's his cousin.
I do thank you for your time, and I'm amazed, and I do appreciate all the listeners, callers, you know, that are ringing in for their advice. My question is, I do work full time, and I have over say 300 or so thousand of super, but my advice I'm trying to work out on is trying to get advice on if you're a rental, you know, you're renting at say $700 a fortnight, like many people are renting, but you do have a super portfolio. When you come to retirement, I'm 58 nearly, and I come to retirement, sometimes you do really think, yes, I've had a couple of properties before, and through circumstances, things change. Would you appreciate?
Yeah.
And then I think to myself, well, we hear about transition to retirement, and I hear all the stories, and I appreciate everyone's input. But our scenario can be I'm a single, and I'm lucky enough through I work in healthcare to have 300 plus in super. But I still have a rental. I found myself in a rental position where, you know, maybe $750 a fortnight. And I'm wondering, well, you know, what happens there?
So Darren, what will happen is that once you get to retirement, and if you're still renting, you qualify for a thing called rent assistance. Now, to be honest,
I understand that to
pretty,
a degree.
Pretty miserable. It's $188 per $188.20 per fortnight, providing your rent's more than $397 or thereabouts, per fortnight. And good luck finding a place under that because there's no chance in hell. So you'll get that. Now you'll also get the full pension from what you've explained to me, which at the moment would be about $29,000 a year from the pension. You would get, just as a very rough ballpark, call it $15,000 from your super as an income pretty much for the rest of your day. So that's going to give you an income of about $45,000, $46,000 plus the rent assistance.
I'm told that you, yeah, you know, once you get to say, as you're saying, once you get to 60, you're entitled to say a certain percentage of that, which is 30,000 of that 300.
Well, maybe, but it depends on what you did with it. So let's presume that if you're still working, then you know you would continue to contribute to super if you possibly could.
That's right.
It's one of those complicated things, and it's one of those situations where you probably want to, if you can afford to, is to top up your super as best you can to give you a few more choices along the way. So once you get to 60, if you've got your super up a bit higher, then you might have some decisions to make about, look, maybe house prices have come back a bit, and you can look at perhaps buying a place to live in for retirement. You know, the reality is that a homeowner in this country is much better off under the welfare system and the tax system than anyone else. So,
and just quickly, I appreciate that, but I've made my own choices. I have had a couple of properties and this and that, and through certain circumstances, I decided to sell and all that. Now I found myself in reverse, if that makes sense. Do you see that happening sometimes where you're
absolutely
become a rental person?
Yeah, no, that's it. But Darren, here's the thing:
guilt with that.
No, there's no issue with that. There's a lot of people in that situation. But look, here's the point. Good financial planning is about making the best of what you've got. And it's about knowing all the rules and the tricks and the different things that we've been speaking about tonight to optimize things. But, you know, you get to a point where you do need to look at, well, what have we got and what's the best that we can do with that? But there's only a finite amount of money that we have that we've got to use to achieve those end results. So it's all about choices. So by contributing more into superannuation now, you're basically going to give yourself some more choices for when the time comes that you can access it, which is in a couple of years. So perhaps go down that path, yeah.
Thanks, Darren. Good on you. Bye-bye. Here's an unusual one. Don from Toowoomba says, Phil and Nick, I'm close to 67, a rural-based, single, self-employed tradesman. Mm-hmm. I've got a low-value home, approximately $250,000. Okay. No debt, no super, but I've got cash and other real estate valued at about $700,000 to $800,000 besides my home. Mm-hmm. I believe I wouldn't be eligible for an age pension. Is selling my existing home and buying a higher value property unwillingly to reduce my assessable assets the only way to make myself eligible for a pension?
It's nuts, but yes. because your home is specifically exempt, and in fact it's a valid strategy. We often say to people, look, you know, everyone's talking about downsizing, but that doesn't necessarily equate to downvaluing. And in many instances we might sell the the 4x3 house in suburbia on a quarter acre block and end up buying a two bedroom unit with a view over the river or something, which cost another $500,000, which we whip out of the superannuation, and all of a sudden we're now eligible for a full or a part pension from Centrelink. And the other benefit of that is that, you know, you've got an asset that's there for your loved ones or for yourself and later on in life if you need to tap into it for things like aged care and those other bits and pieces. So
the short
it's
answer,
absolutely a valid strategy. Yeah.
Don, the short answer is yes.
Gold taps, Don. Gold taps.
Gold taps.
And a spa.
Oh, dear. Kathy
exempt.
Kathy says, I'm 61 of a mortgage. Oh, no, we've already asked Kathy's question. That's right.
Same answer. It's unusual.
Phil and Nick, I'm 60 years old. I own my own small business with a low turnover and an investment property. What's the equivalent of quitting my job and getting a new job again to access my super? Would I have to wind up my business and start it again?
No, you could go and work at the local coffee shop and work for a couple of weeks, get paid, then quit.
I think Jane likes her small business, though.
Well, that's fine, but I'm saying that she can do another little job on the side, a side hustle, and if she starts and stops that employment, she's triggered the release.
She can have another job and quit that job.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be your main job.
Keep your business, Jane. Yeah. Just get a job delivering muffins.
Side hustle.
Delivering muffins.
That's right.
And then quit the muffin job, Jane.
Don't eat the leftover stock.
Stop it. All right. Look, see, with the things you learn from Nick Bruni, I tell you.
Muffins.
Dietary advice, financial advice, housing advice. Well, there's been some funny ones tonight, but it's been fascinating, as always, Nick, and I do thank you for it.
Pleasure.
Nick Bruning will be back down the track with some more excellent advice. Good on you, Nick.
Cheers, mate. Thank you. Phil. You know, Philip.
You've had too many muffins.
I have. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.